Welcome to Signs from the Other Side with Fern Ronay. I'm your host, Fern Ronay, and this is the place to share stories of signs and messages received from the other side. Real quick, before we get started, if you enjoy reading about signs and if you enjoy fiction like Bridget Jones and Sex and the City, you might enjoy my books, Better in the Morning and Better Believe It. And if you like this podcast, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe in Apple Podcasts and tell a friend too. Thank you so much for listening and on to the show. Christine Raymond is the author of 19 novels, including the Hidden Spring series comprised of 9 historical Western romance novels. She is also the author of contemporary romance novels, a cozy mystery, and nonfiction as well. She is also the host of the Wordplay podcast, where she has unrehearsed, unscripted, real conversations with authors. And I am so thrilled she is here. We know each other from the She Podcast group on Facebook, where I learned about your podcast, Christine, and I think that's how we met, but I'm just so happy that you're here. I'm so glad that we're connected. How are you?
Hi, Fern. I'm good. Yes, I think it was through She Podcast. I think that's how we connected, and then we chatted on Wordplay. Yes. I did want to correct you. I only have 16 books out, not 19.
Oh, okay.
I have 19 in my head, but only 16
wrong.
Are actually out.
Because there are so many, and I was counting them on your website, and I was like, wow, she is so prolific. It's so impressive. And I feel like that bio doesn't even do you justice, because like we said, we've chatted before and we're friends on Facebook, and I was writing the bio and I'm like, it just sounds so factual, and Christine is so much more. So would you mind giving listeners the proper Christine Raymond bio? And feel free to start from the day you were born.
Hey, they don't have that much time. Well, yes, I do live in Kentucky with my husband and our menagerie of rescued fur babies. And I originally am from Rhode Island. And okay. Then in my early 20s, I moved to Arizona to Flagstaff. I'd always wanted to see the West. And, you know, I was single and I had just been laid off from my job. And it just seemed like the perfect time for a road trip. So I traveled out there not knowing a soul. But I ended up meeting my husband. And it was fate. It was one of those things that was supposed to happen.
How perfect that you, when things seem like it's something unfortunate that's happening, you might have been like, oh, I was laid off. And then you're like, let me go on an adventure. And it led you to your husband. I feel like things like that always happen.
Oh, I know. And what's kind of funny is I met him through a blind date, but the blind date was with his best friend.
Oh, how funny.
I was friendly with his sister, with the blind date sister. And yeah, she wanted to fix me up with her brother and invited me over to her house for a barbecue. And my husband was there. And so everything did really work out the way it was supposed to. And
that's the premise of a novel.
I know.
The historical Western romance novels take place in Arizona, right?
They do. Yep. Yeah. In Arizona Territory in the late 1800s.
You were meant to live there.
I really was. And from the time I was a small child, a Western would come on TV and I could feel, you know, my heart rate increase and I'd get all excited. And I just always wanted to see the West. And it was everything I imagined and plus more. I mean, it is for anyone who's never been out, whether it's Arizona or anywhere, honestly, west of the Rockies, it is just, it's huge. Like the sky is huge and the landscapes are big. And I understand that it's all the same continent. I get that. But it's so different than growing up on the East Coast.
It really is. We've been to Arizona many times and it's absolutely gorgeous. It really is like being on another planet almost. The colors and just the way it looks, it's just so beautiful.
It absolutely is. But and after being there for a couple of years, we wanted to move east in a more easterly direction. We didn't necessarily want to live on the coast again. Mm-hmm. So we ended up in Kentucky and we've been here for 22, 23 years, something like that, a long time.
I've heard wonderful things about Kentucky. We talked about this briefly, but my brother and his family went on a trip and they went through Ohio and then Kentucky and they absolutely loved it. And it's another place that people say is beautiful with the mountains. And I've seen your pictures. It really is pretty.
Oh, it is. And it's so green and lush here. And we live really close to Mammoth Cave National Park. So it's just, you know, I think people get in their heads about any area what they think it looks like. Like when you think Arizona, a lot of people think desert or the Grand Canyon, but we actually lived in Flagstaff up in the mountains, and it's, you know, very different. And I think with Kentucky, a lot of people just think, you know, the big open fields of bluegrass with the thoroughbreds, and there are places like that. But I mean, Mammoth Cave National Park with the caves and the woods, and yeah, it's very diverse.
And then how did you get into writing?
You know, that just kind of happened. I never really had any ambitions to be an author. And in 2013, a girl that I worked with was talking about that she had written a couple of books and had self-published them. And she was telling me about the process. And I thought, that sounds interesting. And I've never done that before. So I kind of, you know, got a little more detail about it. And then I sat down Labor Day weekend and wrote a book. Well, wow. I didn't write it that whole weekend. But yeah, that's how it started. That was Here to Stay, the first book in the Hidden Springs series. And again, I had no doubt that I wanted to write a historical Western. Again, just because I just love that. So I published Here to Stay. And when I started it, I thought it would be one book. But as I was writing, more characters came into it and they needed their own stories. And it ended up being a 9-book series. And it's kind of like once I tapped into these story ideas that I never knew were there, they just all came flooding in. And yeah, I have more story ideas than I will ever be alive long enough to write.
But it's amazing that, like you say, 2013, that was only 7 years ago. And in that time, like when you first heard your friend say, you know, that she's an author, in that time, you've written 16 books and started a very successful podcast. So in 2012, if someone told you in 2020, this will be where you're at, what would you think?
Oh, no, I would have told them that they were crazy, honestly. You know what? In 2014, if somebody had told me this.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. When did you publish the first one?
The first one was published November of 2013. So I wrote it, like I said, started Labor Day weekend and then had it out. Published my second book in December, 6 weeks later. And 7 weeks after that, 7 or 8 weeks after that, I published the third one in the series, Abby's Heart. And that one, not so much the story, but the date was very significant for me because it was the second anniversary of my father's death. And he obviously didn't live long enough to see me become an author. Mm-hmm. And my pen name is actually a tribute to him because his name was Raymond. Aww. And so that's where the last part of my pen name, Christine Raymond, comes from him.
We chatted a little bit on your podcast about it, but I listened to the Bruce Olive Solheim episode as well of the Wordplay podcast.
Yes.
And it was awesome. And you were awesome in interviewing him and how you were talking about you've had dreams of your dad and of others and even pets and how the ones that, you know, we talked about like the difference between a visit and a dream, even though I think a dream can still be a sign, but a visit, it feels so tactile. It feels so real. And you've had that experience.
Yes, multiple times with my father. The first time it happened, and I can't really remember, like I can't pinpoint specifically when it happened, but I remember that it really caught me off guard. Like I was very emotional when I woke up. I mean, I had been able to feel him. Like I had put my arms around him and could feel his arms around me.
Amazing.
And it was very emotional, but it's happened multiple times since then. And now it makes me smile. Even in my dream, like when that happens, I can feel my reaction is very, I'm not even sure how to say it. It's just like, oh, wow. Like I'll be like, hi dad, you know, thanks for a visit. Like I kind of make that connection now, even while I'm dreaming. It's just the best thing.
Does he give you any particular messages?
You know, he doesn't. And I was thinking about this the other day. I've never heard him speak in my dreams. I honestly don't hear anybody speak in my dreams except for me.
Yeah.
I'll hear myself say hi dad, or I remember one dream I had where I looked at him, it just surprised me that I saw him and I was like, but you're dead. And I can remember saying that.
Right.
But no, I've never, if they have, I don't I don't remember anyone ever speaking in my dreams.
It's funny because I hear that a lot. Yeah. And I hear people say that, you know, the other person, they were speaking, the other person wasn't, but if there was a message, they still got it. Like they still understood what they were telling them. Like it was a very clear message, even if sometimes there is no message, it's just being together. And that's so funny because my husband had a dream about our cat and he said the exact same thing. He was like, Magoo, you died. Like, how are you here? The same thing.
Yeah. You know, again, we chatted about it a little bit. It's just really being open to accept these messages or these visits as they come.
Yeah.
I have to relay this to you because we had talked about, you talked about finding a penny as like one of the signs.
Yeah.
And I was talking to my mom the other day because the anniversary of my dad's death is coming up in just a couple of weeks. And she was telling me that she really thinks that my dad is sending her penny.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah. Yeah. And she had never told me that before. And I didn't tell her about our conversation. She just was talking about him and said, you know, I really think, you know, I'm getting signs from your dad and he's sending me pennies because I'll just look down and there'll be a penny and it'll be while I'm thinking about him or while I'm remembering this or while I'm going here. And I thought that was really cool.
Oh, how funny. Oh, that's so cool. And we also had a little bit of an experience when we were chatting and I think your dog was barking.
Yes. Yes. I had a beagle, Yodel, and she just decided to bark in the middle of our show. And it unfortunately was in such a place that I was not able to edit it out without editing out my voice. So yeah. I left it in there, and it was just a couple of days later that she had a stroke and passed away.
Yeah.
So I kind of like to.
Such a cutie. I remember seeing her picture. You called her. Is she the one you called her your little biscuit, right?
Yes, she was.
She's such a little biscuit.
And I don't know where that nickname came from. I end up with nicknames
for our pets. Yes, it's so funny. And when I saw it, I was like, oh, I would totally call her my little biscuit.
I end up with nicknames for my animals and I have no idea where they come from. They pop into my head like character names almost. It's like,
I know.
Okay, you're a little biscuit.
It's so true. So she barked on the episode and then that happened and sadly she passed. But we were kind of saying how it's amazing that you have that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on our episode too. So it just felt appropriate to me that was the episode that she decided to have her last words.
Yes, of all the episodes.
Right.
Oh, I love it so much. And then we also talked about the wedding day rainbow.
It wasn't a rainbow. It was okay. So my husband and I got married in Flagstaff, Arizona in June. And you would think, okay, June, gorgeous, you know, June brides, all of that kind of thing. Well, the morning I woke up, it was torrential rain. And we were getting married outside in an aspen grove. So it was, you know, off the beaten path. It's pouring rain. And I decided not to let it bother me that it would just, you know, if we had to get married on the courthouse steps, that was fine. It wasn't going to ruin my day.
Oh, you're so cool, Christine. I was such a bridezilla. I would have been like, someone do something about this. The rain. You're so cool.
It stopped raining, but it was only like 40 degrees. And I am in a sleeveless dress.
Wow.
Know?
In Arizona in June. It should be nice out.
Well, exactly. And then I wasn't sure we could get to the spot where we wanted to get married because, again, it was out on this dirt road. So with all the rains, it was going to be really muddy, and I wasn't sure if we could get there, but we did. So we got married, and it was very, very windy, very cold. But right as the Justice of the Peace announced us husband and wife, the clouds parted and the sun shone for just like probably a minute and a half. But I swear to this day, that was my grandfather.
Yes.
I really do think that he was just saying, okay, you know, give him a little sunshine. I'm happy.
Yes.
You know, I'm happy to see this. And then the cloud, it clouded up again and it started snowing.
Oh, so, oh wow. Gotta love
We pretty
Arizona.
much had all four seasons. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's so cool. Oh, it definitely was. I don't know why I was thinking rainbow. Yes, the clouds parted and the sunshine. That is so perfect.
No, I really do think that you know, our loved ones kind of have a little bit of influence.
I think so. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I feel like when you know, like, you know, someone else might say who's not, you know, at this point of recognizing the signs and thinking about this would say, isn't that cool? Like the sun parted. But when you know, it's like falling in love. Like, you know, like that was, that, I know that was my grandfather. Like, I just know it. And it's,
right.
I get it. I so get it. And I really love your solstice practice. If you could describe it, I have in my notes, I literally copied your entire Facebook post and posted it here. But if you could describe and then specifically what happened this year with the one note that didn't completely burn.
Sure. Well, I started this, I can't pinpoint the exact date, but I read a book. It's called Write It Down, Make It Happen. And I absolutely love this book. And in it, the author describes, it's actually, I believe it goes back to an old Indian tradition, like a Native American tradition, where they would write notes and attach it to their arrows, and they would perform it like at sunrise, and they would go into, they would make a circle in different directions, and I don't remember the whole thing verbatim, but they would stick their arrows in the dirt, and then they would bury other messages. And the whole point was to purge the negative and to attract the positive. And so I decided to do a little twist on it. So on the winter solstice, which is December 21st, usually, I think sometimes it can be the 22nd, but that day, usually I try to do it at sunset, but honestly, I just kind of let the universe guide me. So whatever time of day that I feel that it hits, I have special paper that I use only for this. And I sit down and I just write on slips of paper any negative thoughts, feelings, anything. I don't think about it really hard. I just try to do like a stream of consciousness type of thing. And I write one thing on each slip of paper. And then I also do the same thing with positive things that I want to attract. And then I kind of just have a pile of just kind of good wishes type of thing. And I don't pay attention to how many they're going to be. I mean, it's whatever it is. And when my conscious dream shuts off, it's like, okay, now I know I'm done. And then I go outside and I read each message aloud and then I burn it. And, you know, I take my time. I don't throw them all in there and burn the whole pile. It's one at a time. I say the message and I burn it. And some years the message will burn completely and other years it won't. And honestly, I mean, you brought up the one about the one not burning completely. And you know, I can't even remember which one that was.
So I'll read it to you.
Yeah, yeah.
You said it's interesting to see which burn quickly and which don't. I always send a message to my dad. And this year, his was the only paper that didn't burn completely. I think it's his way of saying a piece of him will always be with me.
Yes, I remember that now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it is interesting to me because some of them I will put, you know, I will put a match to them and light them and they'll just like instantly burn. They're just gone. And then others, it takes a really long time for them to catch. Mm-hmm. And they might the flame might go out and it's more like the paper just kind of curls up on its own. And it to me, it's all very symbolic. It's like which things are releasing quickly that I don't think about. And even like the one with my dad, I mean, once I burn these, I just let go of whatever it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, my dad's always with me. I don't doubt that.
Yeah, no, not at all. And it's interesting that you burn the positive ones as well. And the ones offering good vibes, because it's like everything goes back to the oneness.
Right. I'm really just trying to send the message out into the universe. It's like, okay, you know, let these negative things go away and let me put these positive things that I want to attract out there so that they'll come back to me. And then the messages again are just things like, I always say hi to my dad. It's like, hi dad, you know, that's kind of a neutral one. But I've got to say that over the years, I think I've been doing this for like 7 or 8 years now, I've noticed that my negative pile has gotten less. which I take as a very good sign, because when I started doing this, it was almost all negative that I was trying to get rid of. And it really does work for me that once I go through this ritual and it's gone, it's like, it's almost like I'm giving myself permission to let go of whatever I was holding on to. Now, I will say some years I've had the same issue pop up like 2 years in a row, but the second year, it's not quite as strong as the first year. So, you know, sometimes it's hard to let go of grudges or you know, whatever it is that's whatever negative thoughts we have about ourselves or anything like that.
Yeah, it seems so powerful, especially that you let yourself write stream of consciousness, because that's when the truth comes out. If we're stopping and editing ourselves, we're letting our ego, you know, stop us from saying certain things. But if you just let it flow, you just let it out, that's when the truth comes out and what's really, what the things that we have to work on.
And I'll even find myself when I'm writing, every once in a while, I'll have that little mental hiccup where it's like, oh no, don't write it this way. And then it's like, no, I mean, if that's your true feeling, that's your true feeling. Nobody else is going to see it. It's between you and the universe.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Sometimes some of the things that come out even surprise me. Like I didn't realize that that person was bothering me or, you know, an issue with them or this particular thing, or that I had this thought. So it's very cleansing to me.
I think it sounds so healing. Like we're all really trying to get back to that place of just complete love and self-love and comfort with the universe or God or whatever you want to call it, that total peace. But our experience on earth and the things that have traumatized us, and, you know, those are the things we're meant to learn from for our souls to evolve. But as we do the soul work and get back to that place, it's amazing how certain lessons will keep repeating themselves, or certain things will keep popping up, or you'll surprise yourself that something was bothering you deep down. And the more we work on it, the closer we get to that place. And it just sounds like such a healing practice. It blew me away. I was like, wow, I cannot wait to do this. It sounds so cathartic. You wrote the ritual, so cathartic.
It really is.
I also love that you do a word of the year. So last year it was achievement, and this year it's intention. How do you pick the words?
I just let it come to me. Yeah. Although this year I will say for intention, it was, I was chatting with a friend of mine. We were talking on the phone, and she said that her word was intention. And like the second she said it, it clicked with me. I told her, I was like, okay, well, I'm stealing it because I'm going to use intention too. But it just felt right. It was like, oh, wow, yes, that is what I need in my life right now. So now what I'm trying to do is when I do a task, my goal is to do it with intention. I'm thinking through it. I'm concentrating only on this, because I have a lot of squirrel moments. I mean, I really, really do.
A lot of what moments? I'm sorry, I didn't get the word.
Squirrel moments.
Oh, what does that mean?
Oh, you haven't heard of squirrel moments?
No.
it's from the movie Up, that Pixar movie.
I love that movie. Yeah.
Okay, so Doug, the dog, he'll just be like going along, and then he'll go squirrel, and he'll just turn his head really quick, and then he'll go on with whatever he's doing, and then squirrel, and then he looks in the other direction. So that has become known as squirrel moment. So if you hear people talk about it, that's what it means. And I have a lot of those where I will be doing something and I just get very easily distracted. And I think it's because I'm trying to do so much and I have so much on my mind that it takes effort to concentrate on something.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that it's bad. That doesn't mean that effort is a bad thing.
Right.
And I really need to start, rather than just kind of working willy-nilly and you know, working on this and then this happens and that happens, I need to just do all of my tasks with intention.
Oh, I love that. I love it. It's so true, because I was listening to a podcast and the woman was talking about snacking, and she said a lot of people with anxiety will snack to self-soothe, and my entire life made sense in like a single moment. I have horrible anxiety. All I think about is what I'm going to eat next. And then she said, And food is so enjoyable. Like, if you love food, you love food. And why would you rush through it? Enjoy it. Take that moment to enjoy the food that you're putting in your mouth. And I was like, I so have to do that. I love food. So I'm like, why am I rushing through the moment of my day that I love so much? And I'm like, from now on, I have to slow down and enjoy every chew. And that's what I've been working on. So I feel like I need to do that too. Plus with all of my to-do lists, like I'll just concentrate on crossing things off instead of working through each one with intention. That's such,
right.
Such, I so needed to hear that. It's such a validation.
Well, and the thing is that to-do list, hopefully if will always be there. I mean, that's the thing. You want to have a to-do list until the end of your days. I don't want to never have something to do.
Yes.
For me, what happens a lot is I'll sit down in the morning and I'll open up my emails to take care of a specific task, but then I'll see an email came in from someone else about another task. And so then instead of finishing what I'm working on, I'll move to that. It's like, oh, okay, well, this is just a quick email. Let me take care of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then that leads me to something else. And then then this pops up in my newsfeed or something. It's like, oh, well, let me look at that. I never saw that before. And the next thing I know, it's 2 hours later and I still haven't finished my original task. And I just feel like I've wasted time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm frustrated. And then I feel like I've gotten nothing done. And I'll tell you, though, I've had to focus on the intention part, though. Like, I have to repeat that to myself, that today I'm going to work with intention. I'm going to do this task because, okay, we're a month into the year and I've already, slacked off with that. So
I find that hard to believe, but okay. Because your word last year was achievement. And then there was a post where you listed, not in a bragging way, certainly not, but of the things that you did accomplish that year. And I was blown away. Like, you were a host on, I think it was like 16 different a guest on 16 different podcasts. It was so inspiring. So I know that you'll master intention as well.
Well, thank you. Well, and the thing about the achievement is I did that list because it's so easy. And I think more people than want to admit do this. They look and they say, okay, I haven't accomplished anything, or what have I accomplished, or these are all the goals I didn't meet, so I'm a failure because I didn't meet all these goals. And it's really helpful to take a moment, take a beat, and look back and list what you did accomplish. Okay, maybe you didn't meet your goals. My goal last year was to write at least 4 books. I wanted to write 6. I only published 1. So I look at that and I'm like, oh, wow, I really didn't meet that goal.
Oh, my God.
What's up with me as an author? But then when I sat down and listed everything that I did accomplish, it's like, wow, okay, so I'm not a failure. I didn't meet expectation A, but I met expectation B, C, and I didn't even know I had expectation D, and I met that too.
Yes, exactly.
I just think it's really important that we take time to acknowledge our self-worth and what we do and what we contribute and just love ourselves for who we are and what we do. And it's so easy to be negative to ourselves. And
yes. Mm-hmm.
We say things to ourselves we would never say to another human being.
It's
even our
so
worst
true.
Enemy, there
it's
are things
so
that we would not say to them that we tell ourselves sometimes on a daily basis. So unhealthy.
It's so unhealthy. And it's so defeating. It's like self-defeating. My husband and I always say shame is the lowest vibration. So if you want to attract the things that you want to attract, you can't do it from a place of shame. That's like survival mode. You have to vibrate higher. So we catch ourselves saying, like, beating ourselves up about something we didn't do. And then we stop and we're like, nope, we don't do shame. Shame is the lowest vibration. We don't do it. And I get that thought out of my head.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Bad things happen and we make mistakes and we do things that we wish we didn't, whether we did them intentionally or non-intentionally. I mean, it's just life.
Yes.
But I for one, I'm really bad about dwelling on all of the past mistakes that I've made. I mean, stuff that I did even when I was a kid, it's like, oh my gosh, let it go.
Yes, exactly. I'm the same exact way. And now I'm catching myself and I'm like, nope, I don't do shame. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't change anything. It does not change a thing. You can learn from it and not do it again if it was a mistake, but you can't change the moment. So why constantly relive it?
Exactly. Learn and move on.
Yep, that's it.
Well, congratulations on everything. It's such a joy to follow you on Facebook and see all that you're doing. And I can't wait to see what you're doing next. But what's in the pipeline?
Well, I am, and I say this kind of with air quotes around the word working, I'm working on the next book in the Finn's Fine series. It's called Finicky Eaters. And the reason I say it that way is I've been working on it since I published Finagled, and it's just not, it's not coming together the way that I want it to. And I opened my Word folder last week and realized that I have 5 different versions of that story started. But again, I just really think that it's not the right time. And to use the word vibration, the vibrations for that book just are not where they need to be yet.
Mm-hmm. And that's the mystery, right? The second cozy mystery.
Yes, that would be the second cozy mystery. And I have some story ideas for some other books, which I've also started and haven't gotten far. I think right now I am definitely not in the writer zone, but the podcast is going really well.
Yes.
And that's where a lot of my energy has been focused. So I'm just accepting that's where I need to be right now. I absolutely love it. I talk to 2 guests each week and release 2 episodes each week. And I have my guest posts, blog posts on Saturdays. And I've started doing commercials where authors can sign up to have like their books or their series in a commercial that airs on the podcast on Artist First Radio Network. So it's just very all-encompassing of my time. But, I love it. And I'm excited to talk to all my guests and see who else I can get to come on the show. And
I always say God's timing is perfect. So that book will eventually get written. All the books will eventually get written. But for whatever reason, you have to talk to these people on the podcast. And maybe someone will say something that sparks an idea. And then it'll make the second cozy mystery even more perfect. You never know what's going to happen or why it happens. But it's all happening as it should.
Yeah. This whole life is just about connection.
Yeah. Well, I'm so happy that we're connected. And where, if everyone would like to connect with you, where can they find out more about your books and the podcast and social media where they can follow you?
Sure. So my website is www.christineraymond.com, and that is Christine with a K. So it's KristineRaymond.com. All of my book links are there, links to the podcast and all of the guests that have been on the show. I have a tab that has all of the interviews that I did last year and the year before are on there. So pretty much my website is a one-stop shop. I'm also on Facebook, sort of on Twitter. Twitter's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
Instagram and BookBub. Mainly Facebook is where most of my energy, social media energy is spent. The podcast website is wordplaypodcast.com. And please make sure to listen to the other guest episodes. They are wonderful. They are outstanding.
They are wonderful.
I love all of my guests. I really do.
Yeah, no, I can tell. And you're a great host. It's a great podcast. I'm so happy
we
connected.
Thank you.
I'm going to put all of those links in the show notes for everyone who is listening. And I'm sure they will definitely reach out. It's been so wonderful to chat with you again.
Thank you so much, Fern. I absolutely love this. And when you do the ritual, let me know how it turned out for you.
I definitely will. I'm going to, obviously, we'll talk before then, but I will consult you before and after. For sure.
Great.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Signs from the Other Side. You can find me, Fern Ronay, on all social media at Fern Ronay, R-O-N-A-Y. I love hearing from you, and I love hearing your stories of signs. And if you would like to hear more episodes of this show, please be sure to subscribe in Apple Podcasts. Thank you again, and sweet dreams.